You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year... Part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, we're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. Hey ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. My name is John Hudspeth, and welcome to the show. Real quick, before we get into the real episode, I am recording this intro on Sunday morning, April 28th, getting ready to head to church with the family, but woke up to some very sad news. I'm sure if you live just about anywhere in Oklahoma, you know what happened this weekend with all the tornadoes. And last I heard, there was at least two confirmed dead in Sulphur. And then I know a couple days ago in Nebraska and Iowa, I think there was like 57 tornadoes or something. One of them came within like 4 miles of my sister's house. I've been watching a lot of Fishing with Flair videos. He's one of the Googan guys on YouTube. And I know his place took a direct hit. It looks like his shop is completely destroyed. And I was watching, you know, some of his Instagram story, and there was like 3 trucks, a boat, and a Ranger in the shop. His trailers and stuff were scattered all over the place. All his trees are destroyed. Like, this beautiful place. He just built this house in this shop like within the last year, and his place just looks like a train wreck. And I'm sure there's plenty of that going on, you know, in Oklahoma, and I think Texas had like 6 tornadoes. And so, yeah, not trying to be like a huge Debbie Downer, but just my prayers go out to any and all people affected by these crazy storms. I think there might even be another round coming tonight. So yeah, I just wanted to let everybody know that, I'm praying for you guys. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. And I pray that everybody stays safe from here on out. So just wanted to throw that out there real quick. Yeah, like I said, sorry to be kind of a downer, but I just thought that was important to bring up. So, all right, let's get happy again. Let's talk about this week's episode. Really good one. Actually, I take that back. Before we get into this week's episode, I'm going to catch you guys up on what I've been up to. I was actually supposed to be in Nebraska this weekend. That was the original plan, but just several things kind of came up that made me wait, and I'm going to go this coming weekend. There was, like my wife needed some help. My mom, who wanted to go see my sister with me, she couldn't go this weekend, but she can go the following weekend. My sister forgot that her husband was going to be out of town, so I wouldn't have got to see him. So just several things led to me going the following weekend and not this weekend. So still got that Nebraska turkey tag. I think the plan is still to do like a Thursday to Sunday type hunt. So I'll have probably 3 mornings, you know, drive up on Thursday, hunt Friday, Saturday, and if I need to, Sunday morning. So still looking forward to that. Not sure if I'm going to be able to get out and try turkey hunting in Oklahoma or Texas anymore. Just had a ton going on. And so it's just really, really hard to find time. I say it's hard to find time. I've got to hunt 2 out of the last 3 weekends and getting to hunt next weekend also. So it's not like I'm, not getting to get out there. Just so far, I haven't been able to take advantage of the opportunity. Well, I say that, you know, when I went to Oklahoma to the youth hunt, I wasn't actually getting to hunt. I was just helping others. So I've really only got to hunt for myself like one day, I guess. I think I had one morning in Texas. But like I said, this Nebraska trip, have a couple really good days. What else? I have, I guess, two cell cams running up at the ranch right now. Getting a few bucks, you know, little stubs coming out of their head. So antlers are growing. That's very exciting. Every year, I can't remember if I've talked about this or not, but every year when deer season ends, I usually go into like a little deer season slump where like I've just been focusing so hard on deer and, you know, staying up late, just trying to figure out how I'm going to kill one of those suckers and, you know, checking my trail cameras. And when the season ends, I kind of just, I go through like a downtime where I just don't want to think about deer at all. And normally, it, you know, a few months later, I kind of come out of it and I start, you know, thinking about it a lot. And that has happened in the last few weeks. Like I wish I could go deer hunting today. I've been plotting. I've been, you know, checking Onyx, scouting, been trying to plan out this year's upcoming hunts. And so very, very fired up, wanting to get out there and get some food plots in, stuff like that, you know, make the changes. I have a few permission properties that I've been checking out, so I've been looking up like contact information for those landowners. Going to try to do that. The last couple years, I've kind of half-heartedly tried to get some permission. I've made like two or three calls. I think last year I went and knocked on like two doors, got one no, and then one person wasn't home, and I never went and like followed up with them. But this year, I'm pretty determined. I have a few places in Oklahoma that I want to, like neighbors, kind of, you know, in our general area. And then I have a few places in Texas that I want to check out because, again, I'm so close to them. And, again, I've been very fortunate, knock on wood, that I've been able to fill both my buck tags in Oklahoma the last couple years. And so I'd love to have a few more places to go closer. You know, I get to go to my buddy's place, but it's a long way and it's hard to get out there. If it rains, it's like almost impossible to get out there and hunt. So I just love to have a place a little closer. Working on that. Kansas, I should find out in June, I think, if I drew. I did find out, or at least I got an email saying I was getting a reimbursement from New Mexico. So I guess that means that I did not draw New Mexico. Oklahoma, I think, comes out end of May. I just realized Idaho, it is not closed. The draw is not closed for Idaho. So since I already know I didn't draw New Mexico, might throw that out there. Who knows? I don't need any more trips this year. But who knows? Might try it. So yeah, that's kind of it on the hunting front, I think, for now. Let's get into this week's episode. So we got a really, really cool one. We got Mr. Justin Townsend, and Justin owns a company called Harvesting Nature, and he is also the host of the Wild Fish and Game podcast, and just a really, really cool, knowledgeable guy when it comes to really anything cooking. But he has, you know, chosen to focus on wild game. And I would really encourage you to, you know, like before I had him on, I was kind of doing some research and checking out his podcast and everything. And it was pretty incredible, like the detail that he goes into. I think I tell him in the episode, like, it's not just like, hey, here's butchering a deer. It's like, hey, here's how to cut out a flank steak out of a deer. So like very specific stuff like that. And we cover a little bit of everything. We don't go like deep dive on really anything, because he has so much information out there that I really just kind of wanted to skim the surface, give you guys an idea of kind of what he does, and then you guys can go look him up and really deep dive into the things you want. So we talk about white-tailed deer, obviously. We talk about hogs. We talk about waterfowl. I feel like I'm missing one. I know we talk duck and geese both. But like I said, just a lot of really, really cool information, and he is a great guy. So yeah, without further ado, let's go ahead and just jump into this week's episode with Justin Townsend of Harvesting Nature, and we will get into that episode right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's podcast, and today we're talking to Justin Townsend. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I was just telling you before we started rolling that something's going on in our area and all our cell phones are down. And so I was a little worried that this wasn't going to work out, but so far the internet's holding strong. So hopefully we can knock this bad boy out. So
fingers crossed. We'll get
that's
it.
Right. That's right. That's right. Well, Justin, this is a very exciting episode. We're going to be talking some cooking, but before we get into all that stuff, why don't you just tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Thanks. Yeah, my name is Justin Townsend, as you alluded to. I am the founder and CEO of a company called Harvesting Nature. And what we do, we're an online education platform, media platform that focuses on the wild food side of hunting, fishing, foraging, all that. And we do that through various means. But me, myself, I've been a professional chef on and off for about 10 or 15 years. Worked on each coast of the United States. Grew up cooked in New Orleans professionally, and then bounced around a bit. And then back in 2011, founded Harvesting Nature, which kind of was like an intersection of my passion for cooking, my passion for writing, and my passion for the outdoors. And so we've kind of built it into this big community over the past 14 years or so. And it's been really fun. Good opportunity to put out a lot of really cool content, meet a lot of great people, and just share our love for wild food kind of with the world. So I think in a nutshell, that's kind of me. I guess another very important thing. So I was born and raised in southeastern Oklahoma, in the booming metropolis of Durant. Mm-hmm. Graduated from high school there and left off and went to the University of New Orleans. And, I spent a lot of time growing up running around the woods and ponds and backwater of that part of the state. So I love to hop on the show and talk about any aspect of all that. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. And we can go 1,000 different directions with this. And I was doing a little bit of homework on you before I had you on. And I like to try to be somewhat educated, although I will say, out of all the topics we could cover on this podcast, cooking is probably the one I'm worst at. And so that's part of the reason I'm excited to have you on. But just to give the listeners, in case maybe they haven't heard of you, I'm sitting on your podcast feed right now. And one thing that really stuck out to me right from the beginning is like how specific some of the episodes are. For instance, one of your episodes is butchering and cooking wild game skirt and flank steak. Very specific. That's not just like, hey, butchering a deer, butchering a hog, like that, like going into individual cuts. So that's definitely something I want to cover. Maybe not necessarily that specific one, but sure. We have kind of a mutual acquaintance in Nick Otto of the Huntivore. He was just down at our place. That's kind of how we got connected. And one thing, I was sitting there watching him butcher these hogs, and just me, like your normal average hunter, I've butchered a couple deer myself, but it's like, okay, steaks and grind. Like that's what your average person I think is going for. And I was sitting there watching Nick, he was going, cutting those things into big primals to take home. And he was showing me, all right, this is where you're gonna get your pork chops, this is where you're gonna get your steaks, and this is where the bacon comes from, and all that stuff. And I assume that's more where you come from also. So this is a very, very open-ended question, but I want you to just kind of talk about that a little bit of, when you get a critter, how are you looking at it differently than maybe your average person who's going to, fry a couple steaks and grab some burger meat?
I think really, so, I had the unique experience of coming up kind of in the kitchen world. So you start to, we're taught there, utilize as much of the animal as you can, use as many cuts as you can. And, that when you look at an animal, it's not just the steak and the grind and roast, which it's funny because I joke, I'm like, I blame a little bit of the stamp industry for that. Cause when you send your meat to the processor, those are the only ones you get back, cause that's the only stamps available. but I think, being able to learn to do it yourself gives you sort of more versatility and you can choose what cuts you want off an animal. There's nothing wrong with doing just steaks. There's nothing wrong with doing just grind. There's nothing wrong with doing roast or whatever. You know, eat what makes you happy is the first off message. But for me, when even before I'm going out, going hunting, whatever, like if I'm going, you know, mule deer hunting, I'm going elk hunting, whitetail, whatever, wild pig, I'm thinking ahead, kind of. What recipes are interesting me these days? Like, what things am I finding cool that I want to cook with? And I think about those cuts ahead of time. And I also tend to try to leave big whole cuts as I'm processing, because, you know, once you make that knife cut, you can't go back. Mm-hmm. But if you've got big cuts, like if you just save the back quarter of an animal, or the shoulder, or, you know, leave your back straps whole, then you've got the ability to do more stuff with it when you had time to think about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very important point. But, you know, I like flavor. I like a lot of flavor. That's why one of the many, many reasons I love wild game is because you've got all these big, bold, beautiful flavors. And I think there's a lot of cuts that end up in the grind pile, or that are just, you know, kind of cut up or made into cube steak. Or have you ever seen those? You take your meat to the processor and you get back this like bone-in steak. We like call them leg steaks. And if you look at it and it's got like 8 different cuts of meat in there, they've essentially just cross-cut that back leg. Mm-hmm. Those are all different cuts of meat that perform all different ways. And, you know, really you can use them so many different ways if you just kind of think about the individual cut. And so really all that's kind of running through my mind as I'm hunting, as I'm processing, as I'm packaging and putting things away. And so I guess very open-ended question, or open-ended answer to your open-ended question.
Yeah, no, that's good. Like I remember the first time I ever like fully broke down and butchered a whitetail, it was, I'm going to guess and say it was 6 years ago, something like that. And I had watched one time, I had watched like a DVD from Outdoor Edge or something about breaking down a deer. And, you know, they were talking about like on the hind quarter, just all those different muscle groups. And, you know, they talked about just finding that seam and following that seam. And yeah, I wound up with just all these kind of random odd cuts of meat. And so then I had all these and I was like, okay, now what? Like, I have no idea what to do with all these things. Is there, obviously without a visual, it can be kind of hard, but sure. any recommendations for some of those larger chunks of meat out of the back quarter?
Yeah. So, I mean, really you've got in the back quarter, you've got your top and bottom round, you've got your sirloin tip, you've got your top sirloin, your eye of round, your tri-tip, and then you've got your shanks. Those are kind of like all in the back quarter. And, if the easiest thing I can tell people to do is break them down into the cuts and then figure out, so you get your seam cuts, right? That's what you mentioned. So you've got this cut of meat that follows along the seams inside that animal. And then sometimes in those seam cuts, or even as those seam cuts are, you've got what we call grocery store cuts. So when you go to the store and you're like, oh, there's a London broil, there's a, you know, a top round steak, or there's all these things. Like, the easiest way to approach those is to figure out how those seam cuts relate to the grocery store cuts, because then even if it's not a wild game recipe, you can go and you can Google things to do with a top round steak, you know, and you'll get like a plethora of information on the internet. And they may be like beef recipes or other animal recipes, but they'll convert over into wild game pretty easily as long as you kind of watch your cook time. But for those big, beautiful cuts, I think the top round and the bottom round are pretty versatile. So your top round's kind of like this big, I don't know, mass of meat. And your bottom round's a little thinner, kind of shaped like a rectangle. They both perform a little different. They're both good for roast. So you could braise them. You could put them in the slow cooker, the crock pot with some sauce. You know, everybody's favorite, it seems to be these days, like the Mississippi pot roast. So you could like do a pot roast style like that and get that meat to where it's tender and shreddable. Or you could cut it down into steaks. I think it really, in the back quarter of big game animals, particularly, like there's so much versatility in that. Mm-hmm. that you can go several different directions. But with any cut, if you're digging around in the freezer and you're like, man, I don't know what this cut is. I forgot to label it. Maybe it's from 2 years ago from that whitetail I shot in Kansas. Like, you can slow cook it, throw it in the slow cooker, some delicious sauce, and braise it, and you're probably never going to go wrong versus trying to like cut it into steaks, quick cook it, and it may be chewy, it may be tender. You know, you just don't know.
Yeah. 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 I definitely learned the hard way over the years that just because it's a big chunk of meat doesn't mean you can cut it up into a steak, throw it on the grill, and it be good. Definitely made that mistake a lot. One thing that you mentioned earlier, and something that I've been doing better about the last few years, like you mentioned, just leaving the stuff in larger cuts, not necessarily just the quarter, but like you said, the back straps. Like, I now cut the back straps out, and I'll cut them into like 2 to 3 chunks, depending, you know, if it was like a smaller doe or a bigger buck. And you know, sometimes I'll cut them up into steaks, but a lot of times I find myself just cooking it that way in that big chunk and then cutting it up. And yep. It just seems like it holds those juices better, usually turns out a little bit more tender. So yeah, I highly recommend the big chunks.
One, two, if you stick with those seam cuts and leave the silver skin on it until you're ready to cook it, and then take the seamer's silver skin off. So package it with the silver skin on as like an extra layer of protection against freezer burn. I think that's a big, like, that's a big hot tip.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Cause that is something that's like the first thing I cut off. So
yep.
Very good to know. Very good to know.
And I think the other thing I'd say, label, like label what it is. If you've got something special you want to do with that cut later on, like write it on there so that, you know, a year from you now remembers like, oh yeah, I should probably do, I wanted to do that with this cut. Or maybe so like my wife will grab stuff out of there and cook. And if it's like, do not cook, and I write the recipe I want to make on there, shoot, she knows.
Gotcha. How much does your process change depending on like the size of the animal? So let's say you shoot a young doe versus an old mature buck. Are you still going to go through the same process, or are there like certain cuts you can get out of that larger buck, or is it pretty much just kind of the same every time?
No, it's going to be the same. You know, work on the front shoulders, work, you know, through the midsection of the body, get as much of the neck meat as you can off, back quarter, the offal, all the organ meat, stuff like that. It's going to be kind of the same. So, but I think you just end up with more meat. So,
yeah.
it just depends on, and I think really the nuance between the two, and what I would like, what I always clue into is the older animals tend to carry more flavor, right? So if you're cooking for people that maybe don't like as much wild game flavor, then it, you know, you may want to pull the doe versus pulling the doe roast out versus the buck roast, or cooking the buck roast in a way to kind of like accentuate that or help out with it. So,
yeah. Gotcha. I have a similar question to that. And this is kind of shifting gears a little bit, because I want to talk about wild hogs, because that's, you know, in Oklahoma, we're overrun with them. And a lot of people, myself included, are dragging them off to the side and leaving them for the buzzards. Nick is trying to convert me from that right now.
Yeah.
And he's doing a pretty good job of it. But before we kind of fully go into the hog, just kind of difference between like one animal to another, like the same thing that we just kind of discussed with the deer. If you get a hog, are you going through that same process, or are there like little things that can shift or change depending on what animal it is, you know, deer versus elk versus hog versus whatever?
So I think most of your cervids, like your deer, your elk, you know, a very distant cousin, pronghorn antelope, all that, those anatomically, I think I'm saying it right, their muscle feature is going to be about the same. Mm-hmm. Throughout most of your mammals, there's going to be a little bit of difference between like, you know, a deer, an elk, a bear versus you know, a wild pig or things like that. But I think fundamentally, I treat generally all of them the same. The difference is going to be like, there's some different cuts on the back neck of a pig that you can break out, or you could just keep the neck whole. You know, you may end up with some different cuts from the belly or the brisket of wild pig. Whereas you may not get as much goodness off of that from like an elk or a deer. So I think we try to teach like as our approach to it, sort of as we're educating folks and as we're providing resources, is to kind of treat it unanimously so that if you look at the front shoulder of a pig, we're going to teach you the cuts the same way. That way you can transfer that knowledge over to a white-tailed deer or, you know, to an elk or a bison or, you know, whatever. So,
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's jump into the wild hogs. Like I mentioned, you know, Nick was down just a few weeks ago. I think we ended up killing a total of 8. There was 4 of us hunting. We killed 8 pigs. 3 of them turned out to be big boars, 200 plus pounds. And then the rest were, I think there was one other small boar and the rest were sows. One sow was good size. She was probably 200 pounds also. So Nick got a big variety of stuff to take home and try. And he came last year as well. And so, you know, he sent me tons of pictures last year, and every single time he sent me something, I was just blown away. Like, I had no idea. And you would be ashamed if I told you how many hundreds of hogs I'd killed and drugged to the side to be eaten by buzzards. But like I said, he's converted me a little bit. He did take one of the big boars home because he just kind of wanted to try it. In your experience, because I'll just say this, you know, growing up, and I'm sure like you did, all you ever hear is the big boars are no good. Big boars are no good. Yep. Shoot a small sow. Has that been your experience, or has that changed since you kind of learned more about what you're doing?
I can tell you I've eaten big giant boars. I've eaten, you know, little tiny pigs. I've eaten them all. And I think if you approach it from a preparation method, like, what am I going to do with this animal? Kind of what I talked about earlier, right? Like, the older the deer, the more flavor is going to be there. The older the wild pig, you know, the more prevalent it, you know, the flavor will be in that. And, you know, I'll quote Jesse Griffith's hog book. Boar taint is a real thing. Like, we don't know scientists. I'm sure there's a biologist out there that could call me out and say, I know exactly what causes it. But like, for the most part, you can't look at a boar and be like, that boar's got boar taint. That boar over there, you know, in the sounder doesn't have it. You know, traditionally it's the bigger male that would dominate a sounder is going to have boar taint, but it's real. Not everybody can taste it, which is the other really weird thing. And then they say that women can taste it more than men in the meat, of course. I find also really, really fascinating. So, yeah. So overall, I think you take the chance, right? Obviously, if you're looking to shoot a pig, you only have one opportunity. You're going to take whatever you can get. If you've got a bunch, you know, I say shoot the meat that suits you, but don't also be afraid to experiment, especially if you're already in the practice of like kind of dragging it to the ditch. If you're like, no, tried it, I don't like it, I don't think I want to, you know, shoot another big giant boar again and eat it. You know, that's a conversation you got to have with yourself. But I'd say 99% of the time, you're going to find a good method to cook that pig. Yeah. And there's tons of ways to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So last year when he was down, I think it was maybe the second evening, we killed a pretty good sized sow, and, you know, we were gutting them all, getting them on ice, and Nick went ahead and cut out the tenderloins on one of those big pigs and cooked it up that night. And the first kind of shocking thing was just how small they were compared to one you'd buy at the store, you know.
Yeah.
from a you know, farm raised pig that's going to be up there several hundred pounds, and then you got this wild hog that's, you know, maybe 200 pounds. And so that was kind of the first thing that stood out to me. But he cooked them, and he used like a chili lime marinade and stuff, cooked those bad boys up, and they were fantastic. Like, some of the best pork I'd ever have. And so that very quickly was like, okay, this is possible. And then, like I said, he took several home last year, took, I think, 6 home this year. And he's done pulled pork and pork chops and, bacon. He brought down some like charcuterie type cuts that he did. So really, really good. But I want to ask you, you know, if you get a hog, what are some of the fun things you like to do with it?
I do like to do So I like to do the chops, so like the bone-in chops with the loin, the back strap there. That's always super fun to do. I like to do like cured hams and stuff quite a bit. So I'll do some of those either whole back leg, depending on the pig, or just do some of the big muscle cuts off the back. I tend to not grind too much of wild pork unless I'm going to make sausage. And then really I'll just save like a whole bag of grind. But I love making sausage with wild pork too. I think it's really, really phenomenal. And it's got a lot of great flavor. I tend to gravitate towards the really flavorful like front shoulder cuts. So in the front shoulder, you've got like your blade roast, which would be the top half of the shoulder. And then you've got your arm roast, which would be that midsection. And then you've got your shank. Like those, because those muscles are working all the time, they're getting so much blood flow, they can be like super tough, but they can also carry so much flavor. So I like to do those like, you know, very low and slow, either in the crock pot or like braised, or even I've smoked whole pig, wild pig shoulders before, which takes a bit of nuance, but it's on par with any barbecue you'd get. And then let's see. Probably my favorite cut off a wild pig is inside, underneath the shoulder blade, there's a cut called the Denver steak. And it sits like a clamshell. So if you pull your shoulder off and you're real close to keep your knife to the back of the scapula, which is kind of that flat, you know, shaped bone at the back of the shoulder. If you keep your knife close to that and then you look at the rib cage, you'll see a clamshell like piece of meat just sitting there. That is the Denver steak. And that steak is probably one of the most tenderest cuts. I think it's third or fourth most tender cuts on a game animal. And it is absolutely phenomenal. I've seen them marbled on a wild pig, which is pretty cool to see because it's not often commonplace.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that was one thing that when Nick and I, before we came down the first time, we did kind of like a pre-hunt podcast, and you know, I was answering some questions because he had never hunted wild pigs, cooked them or anything. And that was one thing that I told him, that in our area, at least, I think that he would be presently surprised by the fat, by the amount of fat. And yeah. sure enough, he was blown away. Cause you know, I think a lot of, you know, Jesse Griffith or just your typical, hog stereotypes. I think a lot of those originated in South Texas, just because that's where a lot of people started cooking them first. And those hogs are eating, you know, mesquites and rattlesnakes and nuts and just worms, grubs, you know, surviving on it and whatever they can find. Whereas in our portion, you know, southeastern Oklahoma, we get so much more rainfall. They got acorns and fields and all that good stuff. And I just think, one, it's easier for them to find food, and two, they can really put on that fat. So that was one thing that you mentioned the marbling, and so that's what made me think of that. But yeah, I think we tried several times way back in the day to cook wild hog, and we basically discovered that, you know, quote unquote, the stereotypes were true from our experience. But I think a big part of it was, one, we obviously did not know what we were doing, and two, we didn't go into it confident, because we had heard, you know, they're no good and they're tough and all this stuff. So we never tried that hard. You know, a lot of times it was like cutting out a back strap, you know, without gutting it or anything, and throwing it on the grill. And of course it'd come out dried and tough and everything. And then somebody told me once, they're like, oh, you got to smoke it. Like, you got to try to smoke it. And so one time I laugh, we actually did it for Mother's Day one time. I have no idea why we thought that was a good idea. But it just so happened, I shot a pretty big hog right before Mother's Day. And my brother, he was in the Army for a long time. He had just moved back home, and he had lived in Italy and Germany while he was in the Army. And so he had seen a lot of, you know, dried meats, cured meats, smoked meats over there. So it was actually his idea. And so he just went back there, cut off a hind quarter, basically just skinned it, seasoned it, and smoked it for several hours. And it actually turned out fantastic.
Good.
Yeah. And so that was when I was like, okay, maybe there's more to this. And about that time is kind of when like Meat Eater took off, and Jesse Griffith and all the big cooking, I don't know, wild game cooking movement, I'll say, you know, 7-8 years ago, something like that. So yeah, I guess all that to say is I do now believe it's possible, and I think I want to start trying it some more. So still haven't done my own. It seems like whenever I kill one, I come up with some excuse, but I do need to try it.
It warms my heart to hear you say that. You got to go for it. You got to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So we've talked some deer, we've talked some hogs, you know, kind of the two big game species most common in Oklahoma. But I want to talk some other maybe random stuff, or maybe not random, but I want to talk some waterfowl. I saw several episodes where you were referencing goose, you know, stuff like that. So let's go there. Let's talk about some goose. So again, I'm going to take kind of the normal average redneck person like myself, where I shoot a goose and I cut out the breast, and that's what I do with a goose. And I'm going to assume that there maybe are a few other things you can do with it besides just that.
Yeah, man. Oh man. I tell you what, I grew up. Oh, sorry. There's a little dirt bike coming along here.
All good.
I grew up hunting waterfowl. You know, obviously we'd jump a lot of ponds, we'd hunt marshes. We'd go out to some of the like wildlife and preserve areas out by Lake Texoma and all that. And I, you know, I grew up very much the same way of like, all right, we got this duck here. Easiest thing to do. Let's breast it out and like move on with our day. And, you know, I think that I learned different over time, and I, you know, oh my gosh, you can get so much meat out of a goose. If you, so there's a couple different pathways you can take. Waterfowl in general, duck, geese, or whatever. You can skin them. It's probably the easiest way to get access to all the really good pieces. Because if you think about a duck in there, you've got the two breasts, you've got the legs and thighs, and if you're really ambitious, you've got the wings. And then in addition to that, you've got the gizzard, which has a good amount of meat on it. You got hearts, and you got liver, which are all usable. So if you start to expand this whole thing, it's almost the same approach on like big game of like, now I've got all these cuts, like what can I do with them? And I think the majority of people know a good duck breast or goose breast is you know, seared, medium rare, all that stuff. You don't want it too overcooked because it'll dry out. And then the legs and thighs and wings, if you're feeling ambitious, like you can go low and slow in the crock pot. There's on the gizzards themselves, there's two, probably depending on the size of the bird, like quarter to half dollar to a little bigger pieces of meat. And like the gizzard just, you know, crushes whatever food they're eating with rocks and all that stuff inside of them, like helps them digest it. So it's just a muscle that continuously works. So it's not even that it's really an organ, like we think about like the heart or the liver or kidneys or anything like that. Like it's just a muscle inside. Then you got the heart, another good muscle. It's good to cook. And then you've got the liver, which is good for a variety of things, but holy smokes, there's a load of meat on there. We just came back in February. We were up in Missouri hunting snow geese. We hosted a snow goose camp up there, and I think that week, that extended weekend we were there, we shot between 70 and 80 geese. Everybody that was there at the camp, there was 8 people plus myself and my buddy Adam, who were hosting the camp, plus the guides. There were probably 12 of us, and we ate off of I want to say 25 geese the whole weekend, and every meal we had goose. So that can tell you like there's a lot that could be pulled from a goose. And these were snow geese, which are way smaller than like the Canada goose or things like that, which are carry much more meat.
I was gonna ask, I think it was 2 years ago I killed my first ever greater Canadian goose. I remember getting that thing and getting ready to cut that thing open with my knife, and it was like so intimidating because it was just so much larger. And we don't get many geese in our area. I've killed a lot of ducks, but I'd only killed a handful of lesser Canadians, and I had this one giant greater. And I don't know if you've killed any of those, but any recommendations for a giant chunk like that or a giant piece of meat?
And I tell you, one of the things I love to do with those giant like goose breasts is make pastrami. I think they make amazing pastrami. So you season it, you let it brine and cure for a couple days, or a couple days, however much following the package based on the weight of the meat. And then you get it out and you coat it in your spices, and then you cook it in the smoker. And then I like to use it for like sandwiches or anything like that. Anything you typically use pastrami for. And holy smokes, it is phenomenal.
Yeah. Awesome. And one thing I'll just kind of throw out there for the listeners. Again, I'm no expert, but a good buddy of mine who came duck hunting with me, I think about 2 years ago. We, again, like you mentioned, I was just a breaster when it came to ducks. But he at least talked me into plucking and leaving the skin on.
And oh, yeah.
That alone made a huge difference. The amount of flavor packed into that little layer of skin is just insane. So even if you're listening to this, you're like, oh, that's way too much work. Just leave the skin on. You got to pluck it anyway before you cut the breast out. Leave that skin on there at the very least. What about just regular ducks? Any good tips for those?
I think it follows along the same lines, right? Like, so I would say the majority of people that have eaten duck and said they don't like it have probably had like overcooked duck. And I know it's really common. People have this like picturesque goose or duck that's like roasted, and just based on the differences in the meat and the breast versus the thighs and the legs and the wings and stuff like that, is that you're not ever, it's hard to get that kind of perfect picturesque duck, roasted duck, especially with like wild game, because they can tend to be a little bit lacking in fat, like your domestic breeds and stuff like that. So I would encourage folks, like if you're going to prepare a whole roast duck, like cook it to two different temperatures and times. So cook it till, you know, the breasts are cooked, and then cut the breast off, and then let the rest of the duck cook, and then pull it off. I think you'll find that's probably a lot better. But the other thing too is like, you can't go wrong with a pan seared or a grilled duck breast, medium rare, any day of the week. And I think like overcooking that is probably so very common. I don't know if people get intimidated because it's wild or just out of tradition, like overcooked. But I would say too, that's probably a lot of like where that stigma comes from. Is like, I don't like wild game. It tastes really bad. If you overcook it, yeah, it's going to taste terrible. It's going to be super tough, like shoe leather too.
Gotcha. Okay. I want to shift gears a little bit, just real quick. I want to be respectful of your time, and it's flying by as I just looked at the clock, but
all good, man.
Let's say somebody's listening to this, like, hey, this sounds really cool, and I want to get more into this. I want to look it up. What are some basic like butchering tools or gear you would recommend for somebody who's just kind of getting into it? You know, whether it's just a good knife, freezer, bags, saw, just some basic butchering tools you would recommend.
I think for any game animal kind of around the way, a good like flexible boning knife is really essential. So you can usually find them anywhere from like 5 inches on up to 9 inches, but not quite as flexible as a fillet knife, although that's good. But just something so you can get kind of in the crevices of the different cuts of meat, cut along the bone and do that. It doesn't have to be anything crazy expensive. Like the ones that we use for our camps, the one I have in my house, are like the $20-$25 like plastic handled kitchen knives that are, you know, kitchen brand that are like boning knives, like Dexter or Victrinex or whatever it's called, kind of those general ones. Those almost always good. Good to have a bone saw. It's good to have, I use a cleaver and a mallet to break kind of the ribs and stuff down. Those are always good things to have. A good skinning knife to kind of get that skin off. I use like those replaceable blade knives, but you can easily use like a good quality knife. I don't know. It's been passed down from generations or whatever you're kind of comfortable with. And then once you're kind of getting into the processing yourself, I would say you can either go the route of doing kind of the wax paper and or plastic paper and freezer paper, or you can go with the vac sealer and vac seal bags. I like vac seal bags because you get a little more time out of them before you get freezer burn. But that's kind of up to the individual. And then I recommend a grinder, like grind meat yourself, learn about the introduction of fat and meat and all that stuff. And like, you'll find your grind meat will go much further if you're doing it yourself. And then you can learn the tips to do that. And, I think if somebody was just wanted to jump into it, those items will probably get you through very, very well. And you'll find some good resources out there to kind of help you with your cuts and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about a grinder. I have one, but for some reason, a bone saw, not a bone saw, like a big, what do you call that? Is that right? A bone saw?
Bone saw. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think, the local, like Atwoods or something had one on sale last year, and I came very close to buying it, I'm a vac seal guy. I was going to ask you about that. I feel like I've heard lately just a lot of more people going to butcher paper, it seems like, but I don't know. I have a vac sealer and I'm like you. I think, you know, when I stick something in the freezer, I don't know if it's going to be there for a week or a year. So
I like
that added piece of comfort. And then grinder is super easy. And as you mentioned, you get a lot more versatility. You know, you can add fat to it if you want to, you don't have to. And you know, a lot of them have different, attachments now to do like jerky or sausage and everything like that. So yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah. I think that's like, I mean, you can get by with that basic kit. You can obviously like, do I want to get a dehydrator? Do I want to get a sausage stuffer? Like there's so many other things. And I find people like, once you kind of get into it, you go down that rabbit hole of like, I want more stuff. Like I want big cutting boards. I want, you know, a refrigerator to hang quarters in so they can dry age. Like it's good though. That excites me to hear people like interested in it. It's like, it's taking back a little bit of the process for ourselves, you know, and a little more self-sufficiency, which I think is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when I first started. That was one thing I didn't do. I don't know why the cutting board reminded me, I'll tell you why. So I was like, all right, like tonight is butcher night. And instead of thawing out like one quarter, I thawed out an entire deer. And I set up like one of those plastic tables in the living room and put on a movie and was sitting there. And I spent hours and hours cutting on this deer. Which was fun, but also like not as practical. Like I have a kid now and like I mentioned earlier, like maybe take it a piece by piece. That's why I thought of the cutting board, use a cutting board size and not a table size. Basically I'm saying just don't kill yourself because it is a lot of work. Don't, you know, it's one thing like it's not something you're just going to knock out in a half hour one night. Like it takes time. So like you said, leave them in those big primal cuts, you know, thaw them out one at a time, knock out one per evening or something like that. And yeah, it's great. Well, man, like I said, Justin, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but, you know, you kind of mentioned in the beginning, just all the different, you know, sticks in the fire that you had. So I want to give you a chance to lay all that out. So, yeah, if people are more interested in this stuff, where are some of the places they can come find you?
I would say head over, probably one of the best places, head over to our website. So it's harvestinnature.com. We're on all the social media channels. Instagram's probably the one we're most active on. So it's just at harvestinnature. Same for Facebook as well. That's general, like the general plug-in to everything we do. And then, you know, you'll go on our website and you'll see everything from like daily wild game recipes to you'll see links to our podcast. You'll see, we have our own, a line of wild food spice blends. So everything from fish to big game, small game, upland fowl, waterfowl, and we just released a mushroom blend here recently as well. And then we do in-person camps. So if you want to get more into shooting, hunting, butchering, processing, and cooking of, you know, insert the wild game species, look, take a peek at our camps. We do those several times a year in several places around the country, and are a good time to just come and hang out and just like learn a lot, take home some meat, and eat a ton of really good food. So I think those are kind of the broader things that we do in a nutshell.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Like I said, a little bit of everything, very educational, and I'm all about that. So, man, I appreciate you doing that and teaching, you know, people like me who can get more out of their wild game. So
absolutely, man.
Yeah. Before I let you go, any last minute thing that I might have missed, tip, trick, recipe, anything you want to throw out there before I let you go?
I would just say this, like, don't be afraid to just try new things with it. I think you'll with wild game, with fish, with all of it, like get a cut of meat, look up a recipe and just go for it. You know, I think a lot of folks are like, oh my gosh, this is like my prize. This is my prize piece. I spent 3 months hunting and I've got all this. Like, it's there to enjoy, right? That's our connection back to our food, is through hunting and fishing, and take that opportunity, live a little, enjoy your food, and just eat what makes you happy.
Awesome, man. I love it. Justin, can't thank you enough for coming on. Really appreciate it. This was awesome. And I'd encourage all you people listening to go check out his podcast, website, all that good stuff. Justin, thank you for coming on. And until next time, we will talk to you later. There we go, folks. Another good one. Episode 173. Can y'all believe that? Man, I guess I need to start thinking about some kind of cool, fun thing to do for the 200th episode, because it's going to be here before I know it. So try to come up with something cool for that. That's going to do it for this week. Another huge shout out to Justin Townsend for coming on. Go check out Harvesting Nature and the Wild Fish and Game podcast. Lots and lots of really cool information out there. Like I said, Justin does like clinics, like butchering clinics and stuff like that. So look him up, try to find the one closest to you and attend that. Lots and lots of good information. So I think that's going to do it. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to all my crazy ramblings. Really appreciate it. Thank you guys. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.